Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, David Byrd. This week, we got the chance to sit down with multiple Grammy-winning singer and musician Sting and Oscar-winning composer Jay Ralph. Both had just given iconic donations to the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History here in Washington.
It has a great deal of personal resonance for me. And so I'm proud to have done it, but I'm still feeling a little bereft.
Sting and Jay Ralph talk guitars, music, and their Oscar-nominated collaboration, The Empty Chair, on this week's American Cafe.
Would keep my place on the empty chair, and somehow I'll be there, and somehow I'll be there.
Multiple Grammy winners Sting and Oscar-winning composer Jay Ralph were nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song this year for their collaboration, The Empty Chair. The song was written for the HBO documentary Jim, the James Foley Story, about an American journalist who was kidnapped and eventually murdered by ISIS. We caught up with the two artists this week when they were here in Washington to make donations to the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Sting donated an iconic electric guitar on which he composed several of his hits. Jay Ralph donated several scores and pieces of music, including The Empty Chair.
First of all, welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Both of you have just made a significant donation to the Smithsonian Museum of American History. Sting, you donated a Fender Stratocaster. And Josh, Josh, you donated a score that was part of the Oscar-nominated film about the life
of...
Well,
a collection of songs and scores and different things. But yes, the song The Empty Chair is one of the main things we donated today, our song.
Okay. Now, I'm going to dig a little deep in the weeds here, Sting. You bought this guitar at Manny's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Fender Stratocaster. You composed Message in a Bottle on it. You used it for most of your career with the Police. What does it mean for you to give away your baby to the Smithsonian?
I have to say it's a little bit painful. But I think without that pain, the value of the gift would be diminished. So I think you need to feel some pain. It has a great deal of personal resonance for me. And so I'm proud to have done it, but I'm still feeling a little bereft.
Now,
I'm not regretting it, but it is slightly painful.
Well, I mean, as a musician, you know there's this bond with your first instrument. It's almost like your first girlfriend. And so, we all have a story about the one that got away. So probably not you. I don't think so, seeing that concert footage from 1981. But at the same time, this is an instrument that, you've put your heart in. You've poured your soul out through this thing. And it's very powerful to part with, is it not?
Of course it is, and that's why I chose it. It was very significant for me. I wrote a lot of songs on there that were important in my career. But that was the prerequisite for me, to give something away that you valued.
Mm. Now, Josh, your scores and your songs, both of you in the presentations, you talked about the idea of art and philanthropy going together almost as kind of an awakening. You specifically mentioned Dreamers and referring to the DACA controversy, perhaps. Mm-hmm. What do you hope that young people take from these donations to the Smithsonian? Are you hoping that they go, maybe one day that could be my stuff in this case?
Well, I think yeah. I mean, I came here with my mom, as someone who was on welfare and food stamps, and so through that good fortune of her belief and the good fortune of others, I was able to transcend that and grow and be able to do a little bit to chip away at all this stuff that's going on in the world and, put something out there that, can help people understand a different perspective. I think songs can travel a lot faster than other mediums, you know, they can kind of work their way in and do different things, and you can relate to it. It's very intimate, you know?
Mm. So. Now, Renee Fleming and Ben Folds and several other musicians and scientists did a seminar here at the Kennedy Center about music and the brain and music's effect on the personality and how it can, you know, reawaken people with dementia, things mm-hmm. like that. What are you hoping people take away from these sacrifices? This is, I mean, I can tell, he's hurting. He's hurting. Baby's going to the display case.
Don't remind me.
And $200 at Manny's?
I think $250, but yeah. It was way beyond my price range. But.
And back in the CBGB's days?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those of you who know New York will know what I'm talking about with CBGB's. It's not there anymore.
It's not there. It's a clothes store there.
It's a clothing
but
store.
But they've had a little shrine in there still. So it still has some of the spirit of that.
But it is, what do you hope young people take from this? Do you hope that they go, you know, I can be a musician, I can one day use my gift to help other people?
Of course. I think that's implicit in what we do. You know, what's the Kennedy quote? Ask not what your country can do for you, what you can contribute. I mean, I'm very proud to be here, and I'm very fortunate to be, very lucky to be here. But, nice to be able to do that.
Now, I have to ask you, I saw a video of the Police concert at Hyde Park on VH1 or MTV, and you were singing Message in a Bottle, and all of those people on that hill were singing it back to you. And I put this to both of you. As musicians, is that where you go, okay, all those hours in the practice room and all that time fighting over the lyric and all that kind of stuff, this is where it pays off?
Yeah, and I never take that for granted when people sing your song back to you that you wrote in obscurity, you know, with perhaps only the dog as an audience. And then everyone in the world seems to know the lyrics and sings it back to you. I never, ever take that for granted. I always say thank you. I'm so grateful for that. It's a wonderful feeling.
Now, the song, The Empty Chair, you mentioned in the presentation, was you were looking for a metaphor because you'd seen the movie about Jim Foley and you said it was so poignant and so powerful that you couldn't come up with a tune. And then your wife asked you, well, what would you do if you lost one of your
Well, kids? Josh asked me if I'd write a song for the end of the movie, and I said, I can't do it. I'm too emotionally charged, and I don't think I could write anything that wouldn't be mawkish. So I said, no. He said, well, think about it. So then that night I told Trudy about the film I'd seen, and then she said, well, how would you feel if one of your kids was missing? You know, I have six kids. Well, I'd probably, you know, have some kind of ritual, you know, at a table, at a dinner table, leave a chair for them so that perhaps they would come back one day and fill that chair. And once I had that thought, I remember that's the metaphor that we were looking for. And then I wrote the song fairly quickly. But without the metaphor, there is no song. You have to begin with a metaphor.
Now, Josh, when you heard that song for the first time, what did you think?
Well, he had come down to the studio. I had showed him the film, and he was very visibly shaken, you know, and with tears in his eyes. You know, he was very sensitive and very empathetic. And I said, you know, I'd love to try to create something here to celebrate Jim. And he's, you know, as he said, he's like, I don't think I can. I don't even know what that would be. And you know, he did say, he said if there was gonna be anything, I mean, you know, I'd have to see the letter, but I don't think I can do it. And so the director of the film sent us the letter, and you know, I said, you know, just meditate on it, you know, because I had this kind of hymn-like thing that I was developing for the score at the time as a kind of theme for the film to kind of celebrate the honor of his compassion and bravery, not the darkness of what happened to James. And less than 24 hours later, Maestro here sent back the lyrics. I called him up straight away, and he answers, and he's like, did you get my email? And I said, dude, come on, can you at least make this look hard for the rest of us? You know, it's a little ridiculous. Like, well, when you find the metaphor, I'm like, come on, man.
You could make it a little
Yeah,
difficult.
Can you wait like 2 days maybe to send that thing? You know? But the interesting thing about it is Sting and I met in the studio in New York on Thanksgiving. And it was the Thanksgiving, I believe, 2 years prior when Jim was kidnapped. And so we recorded that, and it's the last thing that I ever recorded at that studio, which I had used for everything that I had done. So it's the last recording there. It's beautiful. And it's the perfect embodiment of whatever that song was supposed to be. It's eons above anything I could have imagined.
That's Sting and J. Ralph. To see a video of our interview, go to our Facebook page, VOA American Cafe. That's also where you can leave your questions or comments. Until next time, I'm David Byrd in Washington.